citizenship as well and other features. And then investing in young people and their ability to be self-confident individuals who are able to successfully navigate the challenges of a stressful life and counteract the realities of so many of our young children who are beaten down and have experienced nothing but failure throughout their lifetimes, I think is also a very critical outcome we have to recognize. And then finally, moving well beyond reading as an outcome, as No Child Left Behind would have us do, but to recognize that reading is just a starting point for the outcome that we want, and that is for young people to be able to assimilate what they have read and be able to formulate and articulate complex ideas and arguments to challenging problems that affect their life and the lives of others so that they can move on to lifelong learning and relatively satisfying lives that they can live themselves and with their families. So world-class standards, broadly defined as the first. To get there, we need a comprehensive curriculum that pushes beyond reading and mathematics and some science in our schools. We have to address that then as far as the time for instruction in our schools having the lowest, one of the shortest school days in the country. Getting there is another matter, but we can also take on something like the MacArthur research, which is focused on digital learning in a digital era, and recognize that nowadays with internet capability and the wide access to computer technology, that schools become one node of learning in a network of learning places for young people. And so we can create extensions beyond the school day. We can create integration with libraries, with home life. A lot of this depends upon having ubiquitous broadband or Wi-Fi within our city, and that had been part of Mayor Daley's vision for Chicago. Then with that, the key to all of this is the role that teachers and principals play, and this gets very directly to the role of the universities in our state to provide high quality teachers who are steeped in an understanding of their disciplines and are effective collaborators, recognizing that teaching is a collaborative activity. It is not an isolated professional practice, but in fact demands joint work across classrooms. And then back in the old days when we would need, say, 20% of the students to be able to be successful for a college-ready curriculum and moving on to higher education, if you had a class of 30 students and you were responsible ultimately only for 6 of those students to be able to matriculate to college, that would be one thing. But now what we've done is we've raised the bar for our public education, and we're asking that teachers are able to get more like 80% of those students. So 24 students they need to be successful with, not just the 6 or so who would go on to college for that. And so a lot of the rhetoric that we face is cast as our schools are failing, when in fact our schools are doing better than they ever have done before. It's just that we've been surpassed by the rest of the world, and we have raised the standards for what we're expecting. And so for teachers to be able to move and develop their capacity to differentiate instruction, to use new technologies to be able to reach a larger number of students, be able to engage in project-based and hands-on learning to create curricula that works for students who have different learning strengths. All of these things require highly talented teachers going way beyond the types of teachers that historically have been produced and prepared at our colleges of education. And I'm very pleased to know that a number of the institutions that we work with in Illinois and in the Chicago area are working hard on this particular issue, but it demands our utmost attention to rethink the preparation of teachers here. And then the other thing that changes, and this goes back to my statement about productivity, is how do we infuse technology into the process of teaching and learning? This slide is an interesting example. I was meeting with one of my staff members, and she was on her laptop and turned the computer around to me and showed me this picture, which this is her preschool daughter, 2.5 years old. It was sent by her preschool student to her individual parent account. And this is her daughter doing the does it float or does it sink exercise. For this, and there's a narrative that went with the picture, which was about the young girl exclaiming, "It floats!" And then a teacher observation of this. So now all of a sudden, a parent is brought into the classroom, being able to see the work that their child is doing. The parent is also learning about the same concept attainment that the child is, a fundamental property of how the physical world works that's the stepping stone of a spiraling curriculum around our issues in science, earth science, the physical world. All of that comes to life with this sort of use of technology. We need that type of system in play so that every parent in every Chicago public school has this type of account and access to that type of account for that. And then we're very attuned to the key developmental transitions, the early childhood to elementary school, the middle grades continue to vex educators across the country, and then that essential transition from high school to post-secondary for that. So where does that cause me to think about the role of the university in this work? And I've got my slides out of order, so I've adjusted them here. First of all, I think it's recognizing that given that within 40 years that China and India will be 50% of global GDP, we cannot keep viewing ourselves as a lone superpower in the world. And in fact, we're going to have to be a good neighbor for a lot of other countries, and that the market opportunities for our economy are going to be found elsewhere off our shores. To provide continued leadership, we need institutions like the University of Illinois to have the identity as a global institution. And we see other universities as they are moving offshore with a lot of campuses and other programs, that they are developing a global identity. I'm not saying that this university needs to geographically, physically do that. But I do think that it is part of the identity of a Research One institution has got to, as the Nation at Risk said, you know, history is not kind to idlers. And I think that this institution has got to grapple this with this globally competitive imperative here. With that, recognizing that we are in an era of diminished public resources for our government functions, and our government needs to be about the business of substantial reinvention of how it provides its services. As pension costs, debt, and other things continue to crowd out the provision of basic services, our public employees are going to be under the gun year after year to do more with less. That's where we need a lot of invention. You have wonderful centers, schools, and departments that focus on public sector and public policy issues. This would be very helpful. Then grappling with the whole issue of wealth disparity, the fact that this institution is a gateway to the middle class, and how do you protect that? And then the growing issue of the health disparities that I know that you are tackling with the medical center here in your outreach, particularly to high poverty neighborhoods. But that will continue to erode away quality of life and exacerbate the wealth disparities that we have. And then I think for the environment, the fact that we are not bouncing back from the Great Recession the way we have in other historic depressions and recessions shows that it's the fact that the growth is everywhere but here. We're starting to do better than Europe, but in fact we will continue to lag developing countries unless we have a concerted agenda for economic development, innovation, and I added research to that. The research capacity of your institutions are unmatched and need to remain that way, not only in terms of areas that have commercial potential, but also in areas of education research, for instance, public policy issues, the work that the Great Cities Institute had been doing here, helping to define the role of the city. And then specific to education, it's you to really maintain high fidelity to the mission of access and attainment for that. And my focus on elementary and secondary success, a few things that I would highlight. The work that has gone on with the Urban Education Leadership Program at the University of Illinois at Chicago, I think is exemplary across the country. And if that could be replicated in two or three other university settings, and then all of the other programs closed down, and I know that Steve Tozer has addressed this body previously to this, and I just want to endorse and underscore that we are squandering resources by producing an excess number of principal candidates. It does not help us as a public school system. We are hiring about 100 a year for that. We cannot make a misstep here. We have to have the best trained. We need the same rigor and standards that you bring to the medical profession and to the preparation of physicians. We need that standard for the principalship. We need the longer period of preparation, the practicum investment, the mentoring, so that when our schools hire, when our local school councils are engaged, there's no question that they have somebody who can accelerate the rate of improvement for our schools. There's just no other way for that. For teacher quality, there has been great research on the factors that make a difference for teachers. Content preparation is essential. That needs to be handled by the colleges that house those subject matter, the arts and sciences, for that and those relationships, so that it is a collaborative endeavor by universities for that. And teachers themselves need extended practicum and mentoring for that. And then for the university to continue to develop better ways of using data that we can provide about student performance of those students under the tutelage of your graduates is essential for that. And then ongoing partnerships, the fact that you have faculty that work in our schools with our teachers to provide real-time mentoring, coaching, critical friend analysis is during their practice is invaluable. And I recognize that that places a demand on how you staff, placing a greater emphasis on clinical staff, but that's a difference maker for us. And then identifying key issues in our field, such as the ability to develop assessments beyond the standardized tests as a way of demonstrating student knowledge, learning and knowledge is essential. And then the last three points on college readiness, we have an acute responsibility to prepare students ready to perform at college level work. For that, we can use your help in that bridge for that, and then ensuring that access, primarily overcoming the financial hurdles of this, will go a long way. And I know that we're all collectively struggling with that in these difficult environments. But we are starting, for instance, our annual FAFSA completion process. Last year, Chicago Public Schools were up to 86% of all high school seniors completed their FAFSA. We look to surpass that this year as an important part of this for that. And then designing programs that take you not only getting into college, but graduating. And this goes to the area of diversity that we've got to develop together ways that we're more successful with African American and Latino students in the process. So I think there's a lot we can cheer about here, but at the end of the day, we probably all need a big hug in this environment where we are struggling with the resource needs and the growing demands to fulfill our missions. But Chairman Kennedy, if You want to ask questions at the